Welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. My name is Alan Wilson, and I'm your host on the Leadership Journey Podcast. Each week, the podcast gives you the opportunity to reflect on some of the things that make up a leadership journey. Well, this week, since it's the first of this series of podcasts, it's going to be an opportunity for me to tell you a little bit about what the podcast is really about, what you can expect over the whole series, however long it may run. And rather than me just sit here at the microphone all by myself, I have a guest co-host, who's my daughter, Gemma Brown. Welcome, Gemma, to the Leadership Journey Podcast.
Thank you very much. This is very exciting. I love asking people questions, but particularly when it's your own dad, it's very, very interesting. So speaking of journeys, then, you're at an interesting point in yours at this time of recording.
Yeah, at the time of recording, I've just about finished something I've been working on for the past few years, which is a professional doctorate. And I've been looking at an aspect of, believe it or not, leadership journeys.
Well, that's a good coincidence.
Yeah. Looking specifically at a question that I've called, a set of experiences that I've called crucible experiences. And obviously, most of us know what a crucible is, literally, this vessel that's used for heating metals at very, very high temperatures. But as a metaphor, I came across it a little while back in a book by a couple of American business writers, Warren Bennis and Robert Thomas. And they'd been researching leaders. They'd been talking to a whole bunch of leaders, some of whom had been born, you know, sort of the 1930s, who'd come of age after the Second World War, and another lot who effectively would have been the generation of the grandchildren of that first lot. They originally called the book Geeks and Geezers, because the young guys who'd come of age in the internet era were the geeks, mm-hmm. and the old guys were the geezers. And what they initially wanted to explore was what difference the era of a leader made on them. And they did discover there were some differences. But the thing that came out, one of the main things that came out, I think probably a surprising thing for them because they weren't looking for it, was the fact that all of the leaders they talked about some sort of life-shaping or leadership-shaping experience that they'd had. And so they put the word crucible on that. Mm. I decided that I would explore what that might look like, mm-hmm. Specifically in people who are involved in what I would call vocational Christian leadership, mm-hmm. so ministers, people who lead mission organizations, mm-hmm. or other parachurch organizations or so on. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been working on for the past few years. The whole leadership journey idea is all wrapped up with that as mm-hmm. well. And hence, this is what this podcast is about. Mm-hmm.
So the crucible then you define as a life-shaping experience. And leadership, how do you define that? Probably a lot of us are bringing to the table our own definitions.
Yeah, well, there's probably, you know, some people would almost say there's as many definitions of leadership as there are people who've tried to define it. some people have tried to reduce it right down to just say leadership is influence. Mm-hmm. That's all. And I think that's very much at the core of it. Most of the definitions about leadership, I think, come back to the idea of leadership of influence at some point or other. Yeah. I think I'd probably want to add that, if we're talking about leadership that happens intentionally, therefore it's intentional leadership. Mm. I like one of the writers on the subject, one of the Christian writers, Walter Wright, talks about leadership as being a relationship of influence. So mm-hmm. where you have an individual who is influencing the behavior and the decisions and the course of action of another group of people, mm-hmm. that's a leader. Mm-hmm. There's a sense, and I think Walter Wright would say this, there's a sense in which you've got a very broad definition of leadership. Mm-hmm. Then there are probably a lot more people who are leaders than actually have ever thought that they are leaders, because we all have influence at one level or another. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, in talking about leadership and what I'm doing here in my research and also in this podcast, I am talking about it in the sense in which certain people are designated as leaders, that is their role. Mm-hmm. Can I just come back on something that you mentioned that sort of in the summary lead into this question?
Yeah.
The definition of a crucible, I think I would call it, it's an intense experience that either tests or transforms or possibly both mm-hmm. a leader. Mm-hmm. Often it's a painful experience. Sometimes it may not be, it just may be the emphasis may be on the transformational effect yeah. of it. But it's almost as I've thought about it, and obviously there'll be opportunities to talk about it in the series of podcasts, but as I've thought about it, to some extent I would say that a crucible is almost like an intensified learning experience.
Okay.
That's one way to think about it.
An intensified learning experience. Okay. Yeah. And then sort of leadership then is a relationship of influence, yeah, or some kind of position of influence.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is an exciting time for you because you've just handed in your doctorate. You have this podcast starting. You have a lot of other projects that are sort of around this idea of a leadership journey. But take us back to the start then. Why are you interested in all of this?
Well, I think one of the things is that I have been a leader myself for not quite a number of years. I'm not a formally designated leader.
What do you mean by that? What does that mean?
Nobody would formally designate me as a leader. I'm not a leader of any organization or any church or anything like that.
Okay.
But I was involved for just over 20 years in leadership and in church leadership in a formal capacity. Most of that time, the first 17 years of it, were in Switzerland, where I was a pastor of a church called West Lake Church, which sits on the shore of Lake Geneva. Any football followers who may be listening will maybe know that UEFA has their headquarters in Nyon, N-Y-O-N. And that's where our church was. So went there in 1990.
Did you choose that placement because of UEFA, or was it just a
happy
coincidence?
We were there first.
Okay, yeah.
I think we were there first. The church had started just about 30 years ago, actually in a village close to Nyon.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we moved there, just a few months after we'd gone there, we moved into a building in the centre of Nyon, mm-hmm, which you know well.
I do, I remember it.
Practically grew up in it. So that church there in Neon, and then we eventually sort of spun off a second congregation about 10 years ago that is sort of in the South Lausanne area, mm-hmm, near the university and so on. So there are actually two West Lakes along the shore of Lake Geneva, and of course the significance of West Lake is that it's on the shore of the western shore of Lake Geneva.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the beginning of my formal leadership. I mean, I suppose in terms of leadership, if I was to go even further back, I must confess, I was the head boy in my school. So I'm not sure that was exactly a leadership role, but obviously I suppose people thought I had a sense of responsibility at that point in my life or something like that. I was captain of the first 11 cricket team and, you know, captain of a club cricket team and so on.
Yeah.
So there have been little bits and pieces of leadership.
Okay.
The 17 years in Switzerland was followed by 4 years where I was leading in Northern Ireland, where I still live.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in a Baptist church up on the north coast in Port Stewart, so not very far from the Giant's Causeway. Anybody who's listening from outside of Northern Ireland, you will have heard of the Giant's Causeway. So I was there for 4 years. That's a fairly big Baptist church. Unusual in the sense that while there was a core congregation, because of its situation on the coast, the numbers of people attending increased quite dramatically, basically between Easter and more or less the end of September or even the October half-term holidays, because a lot of people came on holiday or had second homes and spent weekends up there.
Yeah.
So I've led in those two settings, and more recently it's been more, I suppose, academia, with the pursuit of this doctorate, and various other speaking things.
Yeah.
Some of my speaking and some of the events that I do are related to leadership. And some of it is more regular Bible teaching. And I teach leadership currently at Belfast Bible College. I'm teaching a third-year undergraduate module on leadership.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested in the subject.
Yeah.
If I was going to write an autobiographical book on it, it would probably have to be How Not to Be a Leader. I just talk about all my leadership mistakes.
I think that's very unkind to yourself. So it's really interesting. It's helpful to hear about your journey, because from being head boy to now being an academic thought leader, you've obviously had experience of leadership in lots of different ways. So it feels like then for us listening, we'll be able to see ourselves in your story somehow. Is your research then as accessible to us all? Do you talk about crucibles and different stages of leadership? How have you framed your research?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, the research is not in its most accessible state because it's been written as a thesis.
Sure.
There is a short piece that was published in the Journal of European Baptist Studies.
Can we put that in the notes, actually, for the podcast? We'll do that.
Yeah, we can. I mean, it's one of those things that I don't think it's available online yet. So unless you have access to a theological library, it'll be difficult. But if you email me, I'll give an email address at the end of the podcast. If you email me, I'll send you a copy of a PDF of it. It's a it's a sort of 5,500 word piece that just sums up my research.
Yeah.
There's a possibility that there'll be a book will mm-hmm. come somewhere along the mm-hmm. line, because while, you know, writing academically can be a little bit opaque mm-hmm. and a bit technical, maybe for what people are looking for, unless they can't sleep. The actual core of what I did, I think, is very interesting and it's very accessible.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's so accessible that we've begun to do seminars for leaders. So you actually come along and listen to some of the people who helped me with my research while I interview them.
Yeah.
And actually, I think, hopefully, as the podcast series rolls out, I'll introduce folk to some of these people, these leaders that I've spent time with. And they'll tell their stories through that. What that all looks like, as I said a little while ago, I wanted to explore the significance of crucible experiences in developing Christian leaders. So I interviewed just over a dozen. There were 14 of them all together. Most of them were here in Northern Ireland, and there was one in England. There were a couple in North America, and there was one on the other side of the border. Average age of them was 61, so quite a lot of experience mm-hmm. among them, and some very, very interesting stories. So basically what I did was I sat with them for about 2.5 to 3 hours each, I'd given them some things to think about ahead of time. And we basically just talked through their leadership journey yeah. and where there were key things that they wanted to talk about. We focused in on some of those. And then when it was all done, I had to go over it and analyse it, I was going to say make some sense out of it, and that would imply that there was no sense in it in the first place, but there, of course there was. But I had to try to bring it all together, and I brought it together and sort of put it into a number of themes. Mm-hmm. First of all, looking at different types of crucibles that probably occur at different times in a leader's life,
okay.
and then trying to explore the significance, what role did these play mm-hmm. in the leaders.
Mm-hmm. So presumably then with 14 different people, you have lots of different themes emerging, but what were your sort of common threads running throughout? What were your key findings?
Well, let me talk first of all about the three different types, the broad classifications of crucibles.
Yeah.
And I borrowed this from Robert Thomas. He was one of the writers who had who'd developed the concept originally. He talked about crucibles of new territory, you know, mm-hmm. which tends to come at the beginning of a leader's career.
Okay.
He talks about what he calls reversals. So there are setbacks, there are failures, there are challenges, and so on. He then talked, the third one was what he called suspension.
Okay.
I decided that it probably was a good thing to change the name of that, because suspension sounds like somebody's been sort of told they're not allowed to come to school for a while. And I used the word isolation,
okay.
Which actually had picked up from someone else's work. And that basically has to do with when a leader, you know, maybe finds themselves isolated, as the word mm-hmm. says, from their immediate involvement mm-hmm. in leadership. It could be an illness that just puts them on the side for a while. It could be a crisis of faith. It could be retirement. Is isolation.
Yeah.
Those were the three broad ones.
Okay.
And there were quite a lot of sub themes that yes. emerged under each of those headings.
Yeah. So tell me then, if I'm sitting listening to you now, how do I know if I'm in a new territory crucible? What would that look like?
Well, it's. I think it would be, you know, I suppose, what it says on the tin,
yeah.
in the sense you're pitched into a situation that is new. One of the things that people talked about was the experience of calling.
Okay.
Most of the leaders I talked to talked about calling, and almost by definition that is a new territory experience, because mm-hmm. it's taking you from where you are and it's pitching you into something else.
Yeah.
Some people even talked about their conversion to Christianity in terms that struck me. It was like new territory because,
right.
you know, life changed for them. It mm-hmm. was a night to day experience, you know, everything changed. And the whole direction of their life changed at times. And
okay.
sometimes so much so that there was almost an element of calling into leadership that was contained within their conversion experience.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, you had people who would use expressions like a baptism of fire, or a steep learning curve. I remember one of the guys saying, you know, he found himself, he was pastoring this church. He had all the pastoring things to do, and he said he hadn't a baldy notion, you know. And it was not uncommon for leaders, especially older leaders, to talk about how their early experiences, they'd really been dropped in the deep end, and they were having to muddle through. And I think if you go, actually, there's an era thing here, probably, because if you go back 30 years or 30 plus years, there was a lot less talked about leadership. There was a lot less help for leaders than there might be today. A lot less maybe done in terms of training and whatnot. So it was really these were steep learning curves. And those were crucible experiences. But I remember myself very early on in pastoral ministry, on a particular Sunday, noticing a lady who was the wife of a leader in the church, and she was really very unhappy. And I asked her what was wrong, and I found myself, as quite a young man, pitched into a fairly complex series of things that was going on in her life. That was a very steep learning curve for me. It's really like being you know, really dropped into something. Mind you, there's nothing like learning on the job, and I think crucibles of new territory force leaders to, you know, think what they're going to do. And there are some people, and that's almost the nature of their leadership. They love a challenge. One of the people that I talked to kept using the expression virgin territory. She'd been a leader in a number of areas during her leadership career, and she talked about virgin territory, that everything that she seemed to be called into, well, nobody had ever done it before. There was no rule book. There wasn't even a mentor, but, you know, who could tell her what was coming next. It was virgin territory. It was unplowed, unplanned, uncharted. And there's something about that. There's actually something about some leaders who really just, you know, love to jump into something that you know, is a massive challenge. One of the people talked to me about what he called the Popeye factor. He picked it up from Bill Hybels. So Popeye was this little cartoon character, a little spindly guy. And he would get so annoyed at the behaviour of the villain in the story, whose name was Bluto, that he would come to a point where he'd say, "I can't stand it. I can't stand it no more." And he would take some spinach, and that would empower him to go and deal with the problem. And Hybels talks about that, the Popeye factor, that a leader is somebody who looks at a situation and says, "I can't stand it. I can't stand it no more. I'm going to have to go and do something about it." And inevitably that pitches a leader into a new territory situation.
That and spinach, I suppose.
Yes, it does. I think it certainly encouraged me when I was a little boy. It encouraged me to eat spinach.
That's why you're so healthy.
That's why I've got such powerful biceps.
So then talk us through the second crucible. So reversals. What would that look like if I'm in a reversal crucible?
Well, I think I would break it down into a couple of different areas. One was personal circumstances. And so there were people who maybe, you know, ran into difficulties. One of the leaders talked about how family for a leader is often the Achilles heel of a leader.
Okay, what does that mean, or what does that look like?
Well, it means that a leader who maybe is doing a great job as a leader, if something's going wrong in their family, say with their children, whether it's illness or you know, some other aspect of difficulty with their family, that is a weak point then in their leadership. Because it's very difficult to go on leading when that is happening. And a number of people talked about challenges in family life. I think that the other area, I mean, you've also got things, I should say, you've also got things like illness. You know, it can lead to isolation, the third kind of crucible. But also it can be a time of great personal crisis. The second area, and the one you'd probably think about more is actual crises and reversals that are related to the leader's leadership. I think it's very difficult actually to separate leadership crises and personal crises, because a personal crisis affects the leader's leadership, and a leadership crisis tends to affect the leader's personal life as well. It's very difficult to separate the two. But, you know, you've got people who, you know, have experienced opposition, say from within their church.
Yeah.
I had some stories that were really very, very difficult.
Okay.
In relation to that, you know,
people. Can you share an example?
Yeah, I mean, I had one guy who he talked about how he'd been in a couple of churches. And both of them had ended badly mm-hmm. after just a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And his words were, at the end of the second one, he said, you know, he said his life looked like Berlin in 1945.
Wow.
It was just ruins. And part of that was because of the criticism that he'd received and the opposition that he'd faced mm-hmm. and the way people had tried to undermine his leadership.
Okay.
He began to wonder, was he actually a toxic individual?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, he actually began to question whether God even loved him.
Wow.
Because he said, well, you know, look at my life, look at the evidence of it. It just looked like Berlin here in 1945.
Yeah.
So there were some very difficult things like that. Now, those are not wasted experiences. Mm-hmm. They're very, very painful experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not wasted experiences.
Yeah.
We had, you know, we'd stories here of folk, you know, maybe with problems that they ran into, specifically related to some of the political situation here. You know, how to relate to some of the political questions,
okay.
and maybe at times where the church didn't agree with what the minister was doing. Those are very difficult. They're leadership challenges, but they're also very personal as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And okay, so then talk to us then about isolation, because it seems almost like reversal would lead into isolation potentially.
It can do. So, for example, illness is a big one, and you may have a situation where a leadership challenge or opposition to a leader leads to stress-related illness.
Yeah, you know?
So of course. One person talked about quite early on being opposed in his leadership role, and it led to him having to be off work for a period of time.
Yeah.
Now, again, he emerged from it stronger. I think one of the most profound experiences of it was someone who talked about as she got into her current phase of leadership. There was a particular project that she really had a vision for
mm-hmm.
and felt, you know, this is what God wants me to do. And as she left her old position and getting ready to start this new ministry, she went down with ME.
Wow.
And was desperately ill and desperately weak with ME to the point that for a whole year she couldn't do anything. Now, that's a very, it's obviously a very painful thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, often I think leaders, not least Christian leaders, It's very difficult to separate who they are with what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people might want to push back on that. But I think the reality is it's very difficult to separate the mm-hmm. two. So if you feel that God has given you a vision to do something and you're just lying there with ME and you can hardly even watch the television,
yeah.
You know, what's going on here? Now, yet she would say that experience of isolation was a time, and she would say that God did things in her life that he wouldn't otherwise have done. She learned things she otherwise wouldn't have learned.
Mm-hmm.
And she's prepared, and I think the attitude of the leader is very important, but she's mm-hmm. prepared to draw the lessons from
yeah.
those kinds of things and then to allow those to shape who she is as a leader. And also, I think, to shape the activity that she's involved in
yeah.
as a leader.
That's a really interesting point, because in your research, reading through some of the interviews and some of the quotes, there's a lot about the leaders you interview actually turning around and being able to comment on their own experiences and see the lessons that they've learned.
Yeah.
Is that a leadership quality?
I think it probably is. I think that's actually a great question, but I think it probably is. I think leaders need to be self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
In lots of different ways. I mean, for example,
yeah.
leaders need to be aware of what their strengths are. They need to be aware of what their weaknesses are.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes if a leader doesn't have a clear understanding of their strengths and weaknesses, they can find themselves in a leadership situation that doesn't fit, doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, because their weaknesses are too great or their strengths are not suited. Do you know these kinds of things?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the self-awareness is probably does go hand in hand with an ability to learn lessons.
Yeah.
You know, I think some of the writers more generally on this subject would say, you know, yes, you know, experience is part of shaping leaders. Mm-hmm. There's quite a lot in the literature on that. But the experience by itself is not enough. The leader has to know how to extract the proper learning from experience.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the same. It's not just leaders either. I think you can have two individuals who go through very similar experiences, mm-hmm. but yet come out of the experience very differently from each other.
Okay.
Because of the learning that they're able to take.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think I probably would want to advocate for this, but I think sometimes it's a call for a mentor,
mm-hmm.
and I think a good mentor would be somebody who would be helping a leader to review what's going on and to draw the right lessons out of experience.
Yeah. So in the coming podcast episodes, we'll be looking at things like that, mentoring, character, spirituality, maybe looking more specifically at different Crucible experiences, and obviously interviewing people as well. What is it that you really want to achieve through this whole setup of your leadership journey?
Well, I think what would be great for this is that people who are listening in are enriched by what they hear. As you say, what I would like over the weeks of the podcast, I would hope to interview leaders.
Yeah.
Some of them would be folk that I've worked with before. I'll probably throw the net out a bit and I'll interview, you know, a bunch of leaders, and we'll basically be around this theme of the leadership journey and exploring some of the kinds of experiences that we've talked about here today. Mm. I think... I hope that as people listen to that, that they draw inspiration from the stories. I think you know, we had a seminar in February, earlier part of this year, where three of the leaders allowed me to interview them in front of an audience of about 85 people,
mm-hmm.
and that was tremendously helpful to people, and it was tremendously useful in people's lives. And I think this podcast can have the same effect.
Yeah.
And I realised too, you know, I don't know how many people listen to podcasts in groups. I dare say that a lot of people listen to podcasts on their own.
Definitely.
You know, it's the headphones as they jog or walk or drive to work or something like that. And because leadership can be a very lonely thing and a very isolating thing just in and of itself, I hope that listening to the podcast gives the listeners a sense of, well, you know, there's other people and they've got stories and here's how God worked in their story.
Yeah.
And it gives me some encouragement to persevere where I am. Mm-hmm. And maybe also gives them a framework in which to maybe begin to make sense of some of the things that are happening in their own leadership journeys.
Yeah, that's fun. So one last question then. We can obviously find you on this podcast. You'll be hopefully uploading weekly. Is that the plan?
Yep, that's the plan. Great. So, and it'll be probably a mix of me talking, but I hope more often actually me interviewing people and you know, just their stories and teasing out some of the what this all looks like.
Great. And then you obviously have a matching leadership blog. What's the URL for that?
It's your leadership journey. Sorry, your leadership journey.net.
Great.
I think people should be able to contact me through that as well.
Okay. So if I wanted to contact you, I'm your daughter, but if someone wanted to contact you,
you don't need to contact me through my blog.
About coming to speak to a group of people, a staff, maybe one-to-one mentoring, a conference, contact you through the website?
I think so. I think that would be the best. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Great. Okay. And social media, are you on there?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter as JS Alan Wilson.
Okay. Great.
So people can find me there.
Great.
Well, thanks for listening to the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Hope it's been helpful to you. You can come back and join us again next week for some more. Meantime, take a look at yourleadershipjourney.net. Bye for now.